This is Dr. XH Balthazar. I'm broadcasting once again to present my findings from the world of the uncanny. But first, an update on my previous broadcast. The organization I work for has sent a team of researchers into the Black Forest to investigate and track the creature. The squad includes two researchers, a local guide, and a man under the profession of cryptid hunter. According to my colleague, the team will be staying there for 3 nights and will attempt to survey the habits of this creature. This, I believe, is to understand its behavior within our world and the animal kingdom. Once I receive more information, I will relay it to you here. Today, I have invited a guest to join us. I received an interesting letter from a woman. It described a tale that I feel she must present herself. In her parcel, she describes a terrifying story that will make chills run down the back of your spine. It's a legend that offers a great warning for those who like to hang around town surveying the local talent, if you take my meaning. To preface, this young woman's tale is an urban legend many of you might be familiar with. It involves a man named Tom and the girl he was seeing at the time. If you're not careful, you might end up meeting her jealous spouse who will have a serious grudge. I should now let Janice relay her story.
Thanks for having me on this transmission, Dr. B. Hello, everyone. My name is Janice. I'm from Walden, Tennessee. Most of y'all probably don't know where that is, but that's all right. I'm sitting here talking to y'all because a story that has been passed around my town for decades should be written in our history books, but it ain't. I was told this story by my granddaddy, so hopefully my recitation of it is as close to the original as possible. A few decades ago, there was a man named Tom Sears. According to my grandfather, he was a handsome fellow who spent lots of time at the soda factory in Town Square. The soda factory is a large diner that's been around since the beginning of my town's creation, I think. Supposedly, my granddaddy's granddaddy used to go there for his meals. But I'm getting sidetracked. Tom was a handsome man, and he didn't let his natural gift go to waste. My grandfather, Amos, told me that Tom was seeing a different girl in town almost every week. He'd take them to the soda factory, buy them whatever their heart desired, and then he would drive off to a spot in town known as Lover's Lane. Every town's got one. Ours is a dirt trail by one of the national parks in the area. It's been turned into a hiking trail now. My generation has found a different Lover's Lane, but the feeling is still the same. There was a bit of an issue with Tom's desires. You see, in a small town, there just wasn't many single girls that Tom could take out every week. He had worked his way through all the local girls in the high school he'd been schoolmates with, but they were all getting, as my grandfather would put it, plain. His yearning for them had subsided, and he felt that he needed to branch out. Well, the next week after he had decided this, he had already had a new girl in his car. And when I say girl, I really mean woman. She was about 10 years older than Tom, and he seemed to wear that fact like a badge of honor. What Tom didn't know was that this woman was married. I guess she hadn't relayed that information to him. Grandfather Amos mentioned that Tom wasn't much of a fighter and wouldn't dare mess with a jealous boyfriend, let alone a husband. Tom especially wouldn't dare try to go toe-to-toe with someone fueled by jealous love. He knew he was always going to lose that fight no matter what. Well, the husband caught wind of Tom and his wife's affair. This made his blood boil like no other. He had originally thought to confront the two of them and put a stop to it, but something told him to hold off. Maybe it was his jealousy. He decided to come up with a better plan. The husband would tell his wife that he was leaving for the weekend on a hunting trip with his friends. What he was really going to do was to camp out just in the woods behind their property. He'd wait for Tom to show up to take his wife out on a date, and that's exactly what he did. Tom showed up that night dressed and ready to go. The wife came down the stairs looking all fancy, unlike how she dressed for her husband. They greeted each other with a kiss, and off they went. The hunter stalked them the whole way. He followed them into our town. They made their way to the soda factory while the husband waited outside the entire time. I don't know why he would do such a thing, just sitting there watching them play cutesy. My grandfather thinks he watched, so he didn't lose the anger that had fueled his decision. It was that time in the night where Tom would take his date from the soda factory to Lover's Lane. However, this night he didn't know about the uninvited guest. As the two were just about to get comfortable with each other, the jealous husband ripped open the passenger door. He was holding his Bowie knife that he always brought with him on a hunt. He reached into the car and grabbed his wife. He plunged the knife into her belly. She screamed in pain as Tom tried to get away. The hunter wasn't letting him go, that's for sure. Tom tried to throw his car in reverse, but the hunter grabbed him by the collar of his shirt and dragged him out as well. Tom was on the ground trying to squirm away towards the woods. He might have been able to get lost in the darkness away from the hunter, but there was no use. The hunter stood over the helpless lover and twirled his knife in his fingertips. He said to Tom in a low voice, "I'm gonna make sure you never forget what you did." The hunter descended on him, and Tom's wails of pain could be heard all over town. After the deed was done, the hunter left the scene. He drove directly to the sheriff's station and turned himself in. He knew he wouldn't be able to go on with himself, and his wife would no longer share a home with him. He just hoped that God would grant him mercy for his sins. He described the scene to the sheriff. A moment later, the hunter was behind bars. The deputies were moving fast to the spot the hunter had left the two lovers. What happened next is part of the story some folks don't believe to be accurate. However, my granddaddy assures me this is the honest-to-God truth of what happened. When they arrived, the deputies found the wife. She was still alive, but in a state of shock they had never seen. They couldn't get her to speak to them. They kept shaking her until she finally looked at them with wide eyes. She lifted her arm and pointed away from her to the headlights of Tom's car. The deputies looked up. Sitting there on the railing was Tom, but he wasn't the same. No, he was so brutally disfigured that the deputies hurled in disgust. The hunter had made his point, but the man was still alive. The deputies were stupefied. One of them called out to him. Tom slowly turned his head. Blood was glinting from the headlights. They could even see his breath in the air. After some time to get their head straight, the men radioed the precinct for an ambulance. As they looked back to the skinned man on the railing, they were terrified to see that he had fled the scene. The only evidence left were pools of blood. The wife was taken into custody and treated for her wounds. She survived, but her mind could never snap back into place. At least that's what my grandfather said. The hunter was questioned about what he did with Tom's skin, but he never told. Even when he was sitting in the chair, he never told anyone where that skin was. He took that secret to his grave. The reason why I know all of this is because my granddaddy Amos was the deputy who arrived that night. He said it was the most disturbing thing he had ever seen. He's never forgotten about it to this day. Tom and his skin are still at large. Rumor has it, if you take your car to Old Lover's Lane and park it with the headlights on, Tom will approach your car asking you to help him find his skin. Only a few brave souls have made the trip there. And none of them ever told the story of why they looked so damn pale when they got back. And that's really all of it. That's the story.
Thank you, Janice. After reading her initial correspondence, I reached out to Janice immediately in the hopes I could learn more. She sent me a few Polaroids of the spot where Tom sat when the officers found him. They were dried, brown stains that seemed to have been there for years. She assured me she hadn't put them on there, just to prove a point. However, I felt I had to go there and investigate for my own sake. I arrived a week after the initial correspondence. I met Janice and her grandfather. We went over the story with him, and everything checked out. I asked him if he could take me to the spot, but he shook his head no. He didn't like going there. He wanted to leave the spirit at rest. Janice assured me that she would take me after supper that evening. On the drive to the location, we passed by the fabled soda factory. The place still had the same decor from her grandfather's age. I did notice that they were moving newer furniture in to modernize the look. I guess business must be good. A few minutes rolled by, and Janice began to direct me towards the spot. I tried to tell her that I could go on my own, but she insisted on escorting me since it was a difficult place to find. True, it was closed off by some narrow trails that my car barely fit through, but it was not as hidden as she made it out to be. She only wanted to try and initiate the echo for herself. We arrived at the spot and parked right in front of the stain. I immediately got out, leaving the headlights on, and went to inspect the blood. I noticed right away that the fluid was fresh red. The liquid that was drying still shined in the headlights. It had dripped down in the dirt. I pulled my flashlight from my bag and turned it on. Janice followed me into the woods where we tried to locate the missing skin. I shined the light on the forest floor and noticed the leaves and grass were covered in dark liquid. They were in the shape of a foot. I was beginning to become frustrated by Janice as I had a growing suspicion she was attempting to pull a prank on me, but I was quickly assured otherwise. Several cracks of branches came from all right. I turned my torch towards the noise. I shone my light all around, but the only thing that was left was the red patches of blood on the leaves. I walked back to see how Janice was doing. Her eyes were large, her face was pale, and she was cold to the touch. I shook her a bit to snap her out of the daze. She began to scream and run towards the car. I, however, went back to the trail because something had caught my eye. I found my way back to the spot where I had noticed the peculiar object. It hung off a tree like an old vine. It was brown, hard, and smelled rancid. It was absolutely vile. That is all for this week's transmission. So for now, goodbye and good night.